Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy on cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Great to have you with us. As always, we do not take your viewership nor your listenership for granted. It is Monday, October 3rd, 2022, episode 367 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. Scale of 1 to 10, Cody, how good does Kenny look today? You might as well start watching this show if you're only listening to it at this point in time. He had to go to one of his children's schools this morning, and everybody is the beneficiary because of that. It's like one of the three times, I think, in the, you know, nearly 400 episode history of the podcast, you've had a caller on. So good morning. Good to see you.
Yeah, I'm here in my formal attire. Nice plaid shirt. Yeah, man, did a little talk on Peru today for my daughter's school. Give a little background on that. And that's why I'm so snazzy right now.
I was wondering what was going on today. Not a presentation about Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but the great nation of Peru. Today's episode of the Anik and Florian Podcast brought to you in part by, it's in the contract with UFC Fight Pass that I do these spots in a Boston accent. So see the best UFC Fight Pass has to offer on the Fight Pass 24/7 stream, offering a constant channel of historic fight action all day, all night. Tune in, sit back, and enjoy a network created by fans for fans. Step into our world, UFCFightPass.com. And right now, Anik and Florian Rewind exclusive available on UFC Fight Pass only. I guess that's what exclusive means. You can look back at the first fight that Kenny and I called together. I believe Nick Denis was the winner. Several octaves higher, both voices. It's hard for me to watch that, but if the viewers are so inclined, you can certainly check it out, but hard to listen to.
I'm just glad our balls dropped, you know, eventually.
That's finally good. Took a while. Yeah. January 20th, 2012. All right, a lot to get to today. We will recap Yan Xiaonan's successful first main event offering in the UFC as she gets past Mackenzie Dern. A lot of injuries over the weekend. We'll talk a little bit about Aaron Pico's dislocated shoulder and some leg breaks in MMA and in the NFL. But I want to begin, if I could, Kenny, with Yan Xiaonan, because what a performance. What a job over the last 12 months by this individual, putting herself in a position to handle this Mackenzie Dern challenge, which is so unique in mixed martial arts. It's Yan Xiaonan by majority decision, 48-47 times two, 47-47 from the dissenting judge. That was Mike Bell, who had a 10-8 for Mackenzie Dern in round five, I believe. Ken Flo, your thoughts on one Yan Xiaonan moving on up at 115 pounds.
Yeah, Yan Xiaonan and Team Alpha Male really did their homework. You know, when you're looking at an opponent, you have to see where they are strong. With Mackenzie Dern, there is no mystery. She is an absolute beast when it comes to Brazilian jiu-jitsu and her submission game. And very few teams approach it from the standpoint of, let's make our fighter unkillable first, then build a strategy around that. And it seems like that's what they did here. Let's put you in all the worst positions. Let's put her in that omoplata position. Let's put her in that armbar position. Those are the two moves. And you could say the knee bar for Mackenzie Dern as well. But, you know, getting her used to defending those types of submissions are critical to the success of any fighter that is going to face someone like Mackenzie. And it was clear that Yan was in those positions in training. And she was very comfortable because of that. You could see her composure, the way that she was defending, I thought was brilliant. And then her overall game strategy into that fight against Mackenzie was significant. I think, you know, Mackenzie struggles with footwork. She struggles to get into the proper range. And I thought Yan did a great job from the outside, landing those shots to the legs of Mackenzie, you know, landing some overhands that barely missed, and land some hard shots. Mackenzie has quite the chin. But I thought it was a great job by Yan Xiaonan and her team.
So I've taken six Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes in my life. One of them I ended up drinking Gatorade on the curb outside. So probably 5.5 classes. I missed a good chunk of that second class because of all the forward rolls. Thanks, Pahumpa. But yeah. Uriah Faber sort of mentioned the word simple in our fighter meeting, that some of these defenses actually are overcomplicated by some people and are pretty simple inherently. And I think it kind of dovetails a little bit with what you're saying in terms of finding these particular areas in which Mackenzie Dern is strong. The omoplata is one of them. And just making sure that Yan Xiaonan is so drilled in that particular area that she'll be able to execute on fight night, because they have the athlete seemingly who can execute.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so much of it can be solved with just simple positioning, you know, putting your head and your body in the right place, having your arms on the inside of their arms, you know, making sure you're in the right position at the right time, instead of overcomplicating things with crazy counters and, you know, for Yan starting to go for submissions. No. We're going to keep it simple. Keep your head and your inside position. And just do that, and you could take away a lot of someone's submission game, especially if you're in that top position. So you could see she worked, you know, very hard, both on top and in bottom from a lot of those tough positions.
And I do think it's time you start acknowledging some of these coaches. You know, sometimes I feel like Uriah Faber's California flair can serve to like discredit him in the eyes of some people in terms of his MMA value. I mean, certainly Danny Castillo is starting to get some credit publicly, even if only on social media. And I think he deserves that. And obviously Joey Rodriguez, the boxing coach, has been a guy that people have lauded from time to time. So great job by the corner. Great job by the athlete. It gets me very excited about what Yan Xiaonan can now do in this strawweight division. When you look at it, Carla Esparza is the champ. She will defend the belt against Zhang Wei Li, who is the number two ranked contender. That is next month at Madison Square Garden. Rose Namajunas is the number one contender. Third-ranked Marina Rodriguez seemingly has a head-to-head win against like every one of these people on paper, right? She'll face Amanda Lemos, who is eighth in the world. That was going to be at UFC 280. That's now November 5th, and it's not a main event. So that's a three-rounder. Jessica Andrade is number four, still bouncing between divisions right now. She had talked about fighting Manon Fiore, but then pulled out of that fight. Mackenzie Dern 5, Yan Xiaonan 6, Tisha Torres 7, and then Amanda Lemos 8. So I think this is big. If you're the Fall River, Massachusetts native Tisha Torres, Ken Flo, right, number 7 in the world, I think there's a good chance she gets a fight against Andrade or Xiaonan or even Namajunas in a rematch in a main event. What do you think for Yan Xiaonan? I mean, I guess she could fight Marina Rodriguez again if Amanda Lemos isn't a problem in a few weeks here. Yeah. I mean, Namajunas and Yan Xiaonan, I think, makes some sense in a main event setting. I think Xiaonan has a good style for five rounds. I guess not out of the realm of possibility that she could fight for the belt next. What do you make of the 115-pound division now with Xiaonan in and Dern sort of taking a little bit of a step back?
Well, that was a huge win for her. You know, I think it will give McKenzie an opportunity to kind of, you know, recalibrate, look for another fight that would be advantageous to her stylistically so that she can build on, you know, her takedown and striking game, which I think is lacking a little bit. That's what's kind of preventing her from moving into the, you know, upper echelon of that division, which is very competitive, as you mentioned, all those great names. I think Rose Namajunas against Yan Xiaonan is an interesting one. I also think Tisha Torres should be in that mix as well.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, you know, during that fight between Yan Xiaonan and Mackenzie Dern, I thought Tisha actually won that fight. I thought she just edged it out against Mackenzie. So I think she deserves, you know, a big fight as well.
Yeah, that was Tisha's last fight, UFC 273, back in April, split decision for Mackenzie Dern. So, you know, Marlon Chito Vera, teammate of Mackenzie Dern, has a lot of positive things to say, you know, especially in terms of her hands and the power and her ability to crack. You know, he feels like when she is in the gym nonstop 24/7, 365, you know, she has all the makings of being a future champion. Mackenzie doesn't seem to be in any great rush to contend. Even going into this fight week, she was talking about at least one more fight before fighting for the championship. So I do believe she's committed to the cause, but there's no denying that now in two UFC main events, she hasn't, you know, necessarily put that best foot forward in terms of her strategy. I asked her in the fighter meeting, like, how do you resist the temptation and not just like jump guard? Or do you hear people who say, why isn't your whole strategy just to jump guard and try to create as many of those ground situations as humanly possible? Now, she's already a better striker than Ben Askren. With respect, she's already a better striker than Damian Maia. Some other people who maybe want to get a floor fight at all costs, Michael Chiesa. What do you say to people who say Mackenzie Dern should really just be even more forceful in terms of trying to jump guard and get this fight to the ground by any means necessary? Because this is a small octagon, Ken Flo. 30 feet is going to present some more problems in theory.
Yeah, I think that I think that's pretty accurate. You know, I think that Mackenzie still has some work to do in regards to her stance, in regards to keeping that chin tucked a little bit. Her footwork needs some work. But she is making improvements. There's no question about it. That takes time. Those are the little things that take the most amount of time. As far as getting to guard, I would have liked to seen it. I think she's that good. When you're that dangerous and able to create those kind of opportunities, I would have liked to seen her sit to guard with that underhook, almost from half guard, where she can immediately kind of turn that into a single leg, a half guard situation where she can either get underneath or start to take the back or finish that single leg on someone like Yan Xiaonan. So I would have liked to seen maybe a little bit more aggression, especially when it comes to wasting energy up against the fence. And that was an issue that I had to deal with, you know, trying to get single legs. My single leg, I just didn't really understand how to be most efficient with it. And I think Mackenzie could utilize maybe some more guard pulls in that type of situation. She should continue to work on her wrestling, but I agree. I think that she probably would have created more opportunities for her to win that fight if she just went to her guard immediately. Maybe not a full guard, but something like a half guard with an underhook, something like that, where she can maybe attack more freely into some submissions.
And Dr. Florian, if you're listening, I understand Kenny was such a good soccer player that, you know, we didn't put him in wrestling, right? Did you ever wrestle, Ken?
I did not. I went to, you know, Dover Sherbourne, didn't even have a wrestling team. So I wish, wish, kid, cause I didn't do anything in the winter. I played soccer in the fall and then I played tennis, you know, spring, summertime, but in that, winter time, I didn't, you know, I wasn't a basketball guy. So I needed wrestling. Something like wrestling would have been perfect.
My son is tracking to weigh 103 pounds as a high school senior. So maybe he'll be of a lot of value at that point in time to the St. Andrews High School wrestling team.
Nice.
So I can't profess to you how impressed I was with Yan Xiaonan, just in her ability to navigate this particular challenge. And I said on the broadcast, she almost celebrated as if this was a world championship, because I don't think you can overstate how much confidence it will give this athlete to get through this annoying, for lack of a better adjective, challenge and now draw a striker potentially for the title. You know, like this Mackenzie Dern training camp for a lot of these strawweights, I just think has to be mentally emotionally, physically very difficult. And Yan Xiaonan, I thought, just passed this test with flying colors. And I think it will forge her now as she moves forward. So
I 100% agree. The work that she put into that fight and going against someone who's as dangerous as Mackenzie on the ground and succeeding in a lot of positions that a lot of other women in that division wouldn't have is going to propel her forward, you know, with confidence, with her skill level. Those are the type of fights that can change a woman's career. So big, big win there.
All right. So in terms of the mixed martial arts scoring, I was too late in trying to book Sean Sheehan today. I was trying to do so because I still don't know how he scored rounds two and rounds five of this main event. And he's an opinion that I care about candidly in the space. So one of the judges, Mike Bell, gave round five a 10-8 for Mackenzie Dern. Now, I largely, as a thesis statement, am all for more liberal 10-8s. I didn't happen to see one in this fight. But in closing the book on this fight, Kenny, I just wanted your thoughts on the scoring. I had Yan Xiaonan winning the fight 3-2. I gave Mackenzie Dern a 10-9 in rounds two and rounds five. I give Dern a lot of credit for round five, and I thought it was getting closer to a 10-8. I didn't see a 10-8 in the fight. How'd you have it?
Yeah, you know, I was really trying to look with a critical eye. You know, I had seen our star producer, Cody Merrow, tweet about a 10-8 in round five. So I was looking to see if it was warranted. I didn't think, you know, that's one of the few times I disagree with Cody, but I didn't think it was warranted there. You know, what I'm looking for in a 10-8 is, yes, there should be a good amount of grappling dominance, but it should revolve around a dominance that is submission-oriented, where, in my opinion, where you're showing some kind of damaging stuff in regards to submissions. Did you tweak their knee with a leg lock? Did you destroy their ankle and now they're limping? Did you get so tight with those rear naked chokes that their head looked like it was about to pop off? Are you landing strikes that is weakening and damaging your opponent? I didn't see those type of strikes. Those were rabbit type shots, you know, that if they were on the feet, would it be very impressive? And they were on the ground, kind of close range, kind of quick succession of like machine gun type little shots that to me weren't doing anything positionally to weaken Yan Xiaonan. And even at the end, what was indicative of that was at the very end when she escaped that, like, kind of, which I didn't think was a very strong armbar attempt, really.
Right.
She got on top and immediately, with a tremendous amount of energy, started unleashing flurries. Wasn't always successful with it. So to me, it showed that that didn't really do anything to Yan Xiaonan on a major scale. Was it a clear 10-9? Absolutely.
Yeah. Round two for me, I actually was talking to our producer, Zach Candido, in the truck. And if memory serves, I think we were more aligned that round two, there was an omoplata there that seemed a little bit more severe for Yan Xiaonan. So maybe if I was looking for a 10-8, it would have been round two. But either way, Mike Bell is an exceptional judge. And largely, I think you have to get aggressive with 10-8s. And I'm happy that that he was aggressive, even if I don't necessarily agree in the case of this particular round. Our star producer, Cody Merrow, had a pretty hefty bet on Randy Brown by decision in the co-main event. And he gets that ticket home. He defeats Uncle Trinaldo, as he called him at our fighter meeting, Francisco Masaranduba Trinaldo, who was born August 24th, 1978.
Dang.
What'd you make of the co-main event as Randy Brown gets it done on all three judges' scorecards, 2-1?
Yeah, first of all, it's crazy that Trinaldo, you know, 2 years younger than I am, is still fighting in the UFC and fighting these beasts at 170 pounds. You know, he's in that weird weight class that's like 160, 165 pounds.
Right.
And he's going against a guy in Randy Brown just made him look really small. But yeah, man, listen, I thought it was it was a pretty conservative approach there from Randy. I think he did what he needed to do to win. I think that I would have liked to seen a little bit more. I think those are the type of fights where if I see a future star, like a guy who's going to really be elite in that division, I'm looking for a finish, candidly, which I thought Randy was capable of pulling off. He didn't. It was a little bit, I don't want to say lackluster, but there was something lacking for me in watching that fight, but still a good win against a very tough guy, Masaranduba, who we've been calling, you know, we started calling his fights way back when. And he's a dangerous dude who can put anyone out, even at 170 pounds. But you know, it's a solid win.
I think Randy Brown would agree with everything that you just said. He is a student of the game, if nothing else. And I think he would agree with that assessment. What is the record for oldest age at which to compete in the UFC? Because I think Francisco Trinaldo has a great chance to compete at like 47, 48 years old. I mean, he is super competitive. To your point, he's not having to cut down to 156 pounds anymore. Yeah. Never has lost back-to-back fights in the UFC. He's never been knocked out in mixed martial arts.
Amazing.
He now has 37 professional fights. As we mentioned to him in our fighter meeting, with 18 UFC wins, not out of the realm of possibility that he closes top five in UFC wins all time. Certainly would have liked to have had this one, and certainly would have liked to have had that takedown in round two, I believe it was, when Randy Brown grabbed the fence. Now, a lot of ways you can go with this, you know, whether Randy Brown was trying to be plucked off the fence or taken down kind of remains to be seen. Certainly I reacted to it on the broadcast, and I guess I just wanted to talk about the moment a little bit because I thought it was a pretty important moment in the fight, especially given the way round three went insofar as Trinaldo took him down and was able to keep him there and control him for the bulk of the round and did a little bit of damage along the way and wasn't so much as warned by the referee, you know, to do more on the ground. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that if Trinaldo gets that takedown without a blatant fence grab, that he wins this fight 2-1. And I don't even know if Masaranduba, you know, dripping with class, would even acknowledge as much. But we were talking about it on the broadcast. We thought it was very blatant, you know, and I mentioned the possibility of taking out a point. I didn't articulate it particularly well. I regret using the word testicles, I guess, in hindsight. But, you know, I was emotional in the moment because, you know, my inner monologue is that is so blatant. If you're not going to sort of put Trinaldo in a dominant position or put Randy Brown on his back now, you know, then maybe have the conviction. Yeah, that's what I should have said instead of pull out your testicles. Said have the conviction to take a point because the first warning comes in the back and that was about as blatant as I've ever seen. Now, I'm much closer with Randy Brown than I am Trinaldo, right? That's my boy, but I got to call it like I see it and look pretty blatant to me, Ken Flo. What do you have for us on that?
Yeah, man. Listen, I think you forgot your filter just for those 2 seconds.
I thought it was the Anakin Florian podcast.
Exactly. It wasn't terrible, to be honest. But, you know, I think you're accurate in that. You know, those are the pivotal moments in a fight that can make or break you. And the fact that Masaranduba didn't get that point taken away, or that Randy Brown did get that point taken away for Masaranduba, you know, was harmful. It could have changed the fight. And again, I sound like a broken record when I'm talking about this, but every fight can make a break or fighter, right? That could be the difference. And of course, you know, there's a lot of money involved. You know, a lot of opportunities involved with winning or losing. So that's a tough one. You know, it's unfortunate that the ref didn't see it and call it that way. You know, a blatant foul. Like everyone thinks that, oh, well, everyone gets one kind of warning. That there is no rule. Like if it's blatant and direct and obvious, you could take that point away right there and then. And I think that was one of those situations where you absolutely could have done that. Yeah.
All right. Sadiq Youssef was to face Giga Chikadze a couple of weeks ago in a co-main event, and he came out and thought they were going to get a fight. He was unable to get a fight. They get him Don Shaynus here a couple of weeks later, and it was of huge importance for Sadiq Youssef to compete here and to sort of continue to resonate with fans. And Kenny, I know you did not see the fight and you did not see the guillotine choke, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this front choke and Lloyd Irvin drilling this front choke with his pupils, you know, Dominic Cruz and Sadiq Youssef and other guys, like 10,000 times this one choke. And I think I might have mentioned or not on this podcast that Dom put me in it. And, you know, I wake up the next morning, you know, I'm such a pussy, right? But I wake up the next morning and like my throat hurts, my larynx, my, you know, my esophagus, everything hurts, right? So it's not your everyday guillotine is something that Dominic Cruz said on the broadcast. So I don't know if you're doing like a deep dive, you know, KennyFlorianMartialArts.com on the guillotine choke right now. But, you know, sometimes athletes in a defensive position, you know, are overconfident about their ability to defend a guillotine. And the next thing you know, it feels like their life is about to be on the line and they have to tap because of the nature of the grip and the choke.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, that's the most vulnerable part of the body, period. And I know I've talked about this before. There's a reason why apex predators out in the wild attack that spot. You know, it's the weakest part of your body. When you're able to control that, you control the head, you control the spine, you control the whole of your body. You can shut off that blood to the brain. And once that gets shut off, you're either forced to tap or you have to go to sleep. It doesn't matter. It's not a matter of toughness or anything like that. Positionally, you have to be superior and in the right position when your neck is that vulnerable. And if you don't know how to deal with that, you are going to be in big trouble.
One thing Dominic also said is sort of off the record, but he said, you know, like top five guys just aren't going to put themselves in that position, you know? So even though Dominic has that choke in his arsenal when he's fighting top guys, he feels like it's going to be kind of like a 5% thing that he's able to actually get it, which maybe is neither here nor there. We're going to talk about some of the other performances when Ray Longo comes on here in a few minutes, but I just want to talk to you about some of these sports injuries, man, because when somebody has a huge injury, like Chance Rencounter several months ago had his entire rib cage shattered by a kick, you know, and it's thoughts and prayers from everybody for about 24, 48 hours. And then everybody kind of disappears and you can barely breathe for, you know, several months. And we saw some really nasty leg breaks this weekend. First fight of the night in Bellator, Richard Palencia, and then Minnesota Vikings safety Lewis Seen. And the Palencia one was like right out of the chute and not unlike Chris Weidman. One of the first kicks he threw, it was their first fight of the night. And, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm looking for out of you, but you know, this is the second time we've seen a guy essentially first kick of the night, you know, I'm the offensive guy throwing it and your leg snaps. And then and now you're looking at, you know, 12 months of rehab.
John, you know, I could deal with a lot of things. You know, I'm a son of a surgeon. And I remember my dad like reviewing surgeries and I was like way too young to be watching that stuff. And I'd see like a chest all opened up, a beating heart, like, you know, like it was like my early memories and I see that. So I'm like used to that stuff, but one of the things I cannot stand is when I see a bone that's either not in the place where it should be, or when you get these compound fractures that we've seen, like the Chris Weidman one, the Anderson Silva one, Corey Hill from way back. These are the ones I'll see it once as I'm watching it live, and that's it. I have something in my stomach that when I see that, I cannot stand seeing that. So yeah, my heart goes out to those guys. And that's a great point, man. It's like everyone is, you know, worried about those guys in the moment. And then, you know, you see them off in a stretcher and someone tweets something, hey guys, you know, appreciate the support, I'll be okay. The reality is that is a long road to recovery. You know, of course, Conor McGregor, like these are really bad injuries that oftentimes when the fighter returns, or let's say an NFL guy returns, they're not quite the same. If they are, it's a rarity. It is extremely rare. Why? Because physically, there's been an incredible amount of damage to the body, right? Like a bone breaking like that, it takes a lot to recover on a physical level. And a lot of times, you know, your best bets at recovery involve probably illegal performance-enhancing drugs.
Sure.
To get you even close to 100%. Now, there's the physical component, and then there's the mental component of it as well, of going, should I throw this kick again? Can I throw this kick again? You know, the road to recovery as far as kicking a pad, kicking a bag, kicking a sparring partner with shin guards, and then going out in an actual fight and getting to the point where you can throw it full on without hesitation against another guy who doesn't have a shin guard.
Yeah,
it's a very difficult thing. So it's one of the worst injuries I think, to come back from.
I pray that Chris Weidman is able to come back. And, you know, I think it stands to reason that he will not open with a leg kick, even if he gets all the confidence in the world to throw it in training. And what a savage Dr. Florian, right? Apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. I bet, you know, Dr. Gus Florian did not have a queasy stomach when Kenny was doing that to Joe Lozon back in 2008. You know, I bet he was just fine with all that blood. Probably wanted a couple more super necessary shots. Didn't you, Dr. Florian, right? Wanted a couple more elbows on the ground for Joe Lozon, you know? He talked a little bit of trash about your son leading up to the fight. I get it. All right. Aaron Pico dislocates his shoulder. Our good friend Brandon Gibson, one of the classier men in MMA, tries to pop it back in. And, you know, perhaps if he had gotten it done on the first or second try, the fight continues. So I don't even know if this is a fair question, but I mean, so should corner men and women now need to learn how to expeditiously pop a shoulder back in for future reference or what?
Hey, why not? You know, the best kind of people learn from other people's mistakes. I don't want to say Brandon Gibson, that was a mistake in any, you know, in any way, shape or form. He was doing his best to try to put that shoulder back in place. You know, kudos to him for trying that. And it might be that he did know how to do it. He just wasn't able to. It can be a very difficult thing. I remember when I was doing my CPR certification for, you know, certification through Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, they taught us how to put things back into place, like a shoulder and stuff like that. And they taught me, I don't know if I'd be able to do it. I'd probably need to get the guy on the ground and put 2 feet like in his shoulder and like pull his arm out of the socket, which
right.
Of course you probably wouldn't be able to do in the middle of a professional mixed martial arts fight, but right. It's no easy task, number one, but I do think there could be some value there, you know, of really learning how to do something like that. Having the ability to save your fighter from an opponent with a cut, you know, knowing how to, you know, get that fighter to continue with a cut or, you know, how yeah. to continue with a dislocated limb is huge. You know, that's a part of your job as a corner man. But I think it's a tall ask. It's a big ask for someone like Brandon Gibson, you know, who's there just trying to help his fighter on a technical level. But man, that's really unfortunate, man. Poor Aaron Pico.
Yeah, no, I felt for Pico in the whole corner and, is what it is. Cody's writing in the chat, Lethwei has a 2-minute timeout that you can use after being knocked out. That sounds super safe, huh? That's wow. Miami Dolphins have that too for Tua Tagovailoa. Just throw him back in the fucking game, ruin his damn career. All right. Let's not make the star of the show wait any longer. Let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Ray Longo. I want to make it a point to not be somber off the top today. You look a little disheveled today, Raymond. You doing okay?
I'm trying to look at my hair. I don't know what. I need a haircut.
What happened?
My hair's out of control.
It's windy out there, huh?
Oh, the weather turned, man. Bad. It's freezing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Would you have tried to put your fighter's arm back in? Do you know how to do that? I don't think I would have been able to, and I've been taught how to do it. What do you do with the dislocated shoulder, man?
No, I've never been taught. I've never been taught how to do it. And the guy, a kid comes in, he goes, hey, if that happened to me in my fight, could you have got my shoulder back in? I go, absolutely not. Absolutely. You don't want that either.
Mr. Miyagi, you little yeah, Mr. Miyagi.
I think Marab's good. I think Marab has popped a couple of shoulders back in. So, you know, it's one of those things. I think if you did a couple, you could do it. But, you know, it happened to me sparring once. So, I mean, I feel for the guy, you know, and I did keep fighting. So it was weird. You know,
Marab
so
would just probably just keep ramming his shoulder into the side of the octagon until it went back in.
Yeah, right. Remember the old Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon?
Exactly. Yeah.
Kenny, I was just going to say, like, how much you want to bet if Mehrab Dwalishwili's shoulder came out during his own fight that he would find a way and use something in the arena to pop his own shoulder right
in? He would instruct us how to do it, trust me.
Yeah.
Or he'd do it himself.
Savage.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you've ever had to prepare an athlete for a stylistic challenge like Mackenzie Dern. You know, I hope TJ Dillashaw's doing his homework, certainly when it comes to Aljamain Sterling and all of his annoyances on the ground, if he's able to get the fight there. But what did you make of Yan Xiaonan defensively and otherwise in beating Mackenzie Dern over 5 rounds just a couple of days ago?
I tell you, I really enjoyed that fight for the exact reason you're saying, is because there's always that thing, she's down. There's a minute to go, you know, it had that element of excitement that makes for great anything, especially a fight where you know the girl's going to win the fight, but man, there's 2 minutes to go and she could be submitted any second. So I thought it was a great fight. I want to say something, you know, I love these little clips that Cody puts up now because I got like a 10-minute attention span, so I'm good for those clips. But Kenny, man, I got to say, hit that pick right on. I listened to that yesterday. He really, I almost got another respect for you because it was like he just said, I'm not satisfied yet, because Dern is good, man. She is coming forward. She's tough. I think, like, again, I think it was Kenny or somebody else said, if she gets her wrestling down, that she's a major problem because she's not lacking grit. She's not lacking determination. I think she made great, like, I'm probably repeating what he said, but
no, it's good.
Strides in her stand-up, but defensively she was off. You could see the left hook looked like it had a magnet on its hand, like she would get hit every time with it, and it was a little confusing, but she's somebody I'm looking at that you really could work with any way you want. She looks like she's not lacking the desire to want to get better. You know what I mean? Because she already has. I think she's made great strides, but the fact that Kenny said he just wasn't sold yet, see, that's high level to me. It really is. So, because I wasn't sure, and you know, I thought she was better all the way around. But that other kid did a great job defensively. You can't ask for anything more. So, did somebody say Kenny? She's a white belt, or is that a joke?
Yeah, I mean, she might be. I know she comes from, you know, a Sanda background, you know, with just some grappling stuff like that. But I mean, she did her homework though. I mean, the Alpha Male guys had her definitely doing a lot of groundwork in preparation for this.
Yeah, because Dern is definitely another level on the floor. There's no question about it. You can see the way she transitions, and just a great, you know, just a great look. But that was a great fight. So yeah, but great fight on both ends. But Jan definitely won the fight. Unless you score that last round at, you know, 10-8, then you could come to a draw like one guy had it.
Right.
It might be hard to defend, but I think she did enough to win that fight for sure.
Uriah Faber said she is getting a belt upgrade. So certainly probably going to be a blue belt the next time she graces the octagon. I mean, can you just give her a purple belt? Can't do that, Ken Flo, right? I mean, I guess you can do whatever you want, right? I mean, hey, there's a lot of black belts on that UFC roster. Seems like they hand those out like candy these days, no?
Not a whole lot of brown or black belts that would have been able to avoid a submission against Mackenzie Dern.
You know, so, Kenny, yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. When Weidman was coming up, I mean, that guy was a white belt, a blue belt. He's just tapping out black belts. And at the time, Kenny, I would tell like a jiu-jitsu guy, he's tapping out black. Impossible. It's impossible. It can't happen. I go, really? Can't happen. Watching a guy run through a fucking room of guys that are really, really like, just run through them. And then he went to the city. And I guess it was like a black belt class. And I think he had a good day. And Dana goes, what belt are you? It's like, maybe he said purple or blue. And Dana just gave him a brown belt, like right away. Right away. The only reason he didn't give him the black belt is because it was Matt's guy, I think. But he said, I have to do this, I think, to save everybody else from going, what the hell is going on? Because, you know, Kenny, back in the day, if you were a purple belt, you had to beat a brown. You know, like they have a nice way of moving up. Now it's not like that, obviously, right? Everything's just a stripe and a free-for-all. But for what he did at that time, nobody could even believe it. So I think I don't know where I'm going with that.
I remember hearing about Chris Weidman before I even saw him in the UFC. And people were talking about this kid from Long Island. They're like, this kid's a monster. Wait till you see him. He's a dynamo on the ground as well. He's tapping out black belts. Like, watch out for this kid. So I heard about him before he even fought in the UFC.
When I saw bro, I remember one of Matt's black belts who, you know, was one of my students also. I met him at a point. He goes, you know, and I didn't even know why. And he's like, what do you do when you get these wrestlers, man? They're young and, you know, God forbid you're like 35 or 40. You got a 22, 23-year-old monster.
Oh,
just right. With squeeze strength, that's sickening. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and he gets it. And he freaking gets it.
Picked
early.
It up quick. Yeah.
I mean, I watching Bo Nickel was kind of like, you know, Weidman when he started out taking some guys down, just Darce choking them or choking, just guillotine the other guy. Just, you could see it was just brutal. So, like, even for Bo Nickel, right away, he could beat 85% of the guys. There's no question in my mind. You know, like, as he goes on, it'll be interesting to see. But he looks like he wants to be there and he gets it, which is half the battle, you know. And John, just to your point with the Chinese girl, like even when I get a person like that's good, like at stand up, how to get back to your feet, bad position, start them off with that. So they're not taken back by that. And it looks like that was the kind of the roadmap, you know, not getting back to the feet as well, but you do have Mackenzie Dern on you, but she did survive against a high level, you know, it's almost like, back in the day, you were on the floor with Paul Harris, and he didn't rip your knee out. You know what I mean? Like, that was almost mandatory. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, until he got, you know, somebody who, but that kid, I think, Alan, whoever dissected him.
Alan Belcher.
Belcher, yeah. You know what I mean? But before that, like, that was one guy just didn't want Chris to fight at the time coming up. I thought it was too, risky for not a good reward. You know what I mean? Because that guy was just, man, he was just latching. They were fining him for holding on to him.
Yeah. You might as well like pre-book a hospital bed when you fight Poyatos. And if you are a new fan, go to Fight Pass. Husamar Poyatos. That's Husamar with an R.
Had some muscles back in the day. Had a few muscles.
And he felt like there were a lot of things super necessary after the horn or the tap.
Yeah, right? he'd never hear the horn or the referee telling him to break or the tap for some reason. Yeah. I don't know
why. I know towards the end he started fighting with a hearing aid and just to cover it up a little bit.
Speaking of which, can you hear out of your left ear right now with that hair matted over the left ear? You can still hear out of that? There you go. There you go, Ray.
I'm out of control.
All right, so a few things I just want to get to with you.
Yeah, go ahead. I think I'm back.
That's good. I like this without the headphones. I like this much better without the headphones. You just, ripping into the...
I need a hat. Oh, you do? It's better without the headphones because I have them in my pocket in case we need them.
No, we're good. We're good. So
the audio sounds good.
I wonder if Chris Weidman, and by the way, I think you're... Bo Nickel, Chris Weidman comparison is very appropriate in a lot of ways. And I think there's a lot of people agree with you that Bo Nickel right now could beat 85% of the guys in the UFC in his division.
Or 90% or whatever. Yeah.
You know, I saw two, what do they call it? A compound fracture. I mean, there were two nasty, nasty leg breaks this weekend. One involving Bellator fighter Richard Palencia and then Minnesota Vikings safety in the NFL, Lewis Seen. And I don't know. I just wonder, like, you know, how Chris is doing and how he even reacts when he sees guys, you know, enter the process, the rehab process day one, you know, that he's sort of still in now, you know, a year plus removed from, you know, his accident.
You know, it's funny. I just got off the phone with him right before the podcast, but, you know, he wanted to discuss some of the gym drama that he heard about. So I had a, I gave him his 5 minutes. I go, just beat me up. I know I empowered everybody and did every, you know, whatever. So that was the gist of the conversation. I never even got to the point where, how are you feeling? I just listened to him and I said, look, I got to run. I got to do the podcast. I got the hell out of there, but it looks like he's doing all right. But I don't know. You'd have to ask him, but I will it next time, but I'm sure it's not a good thing seeing other people with the same problem you had. That's got to hurt a little
well,
bit.
Well, we'll get him on the podcast, friend of the program, and get that update. In terms of the gym drama, I don't know how much you want to share, but
No, it's all bullshit stuff.
All right. Well, no, I did hear some rumblings then that there is an open workout involving Aljamain Sterling. I don't know if that has anything to do with the drama.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
No,
what can you tell us about an open workout in Garden City, New York, involving the undisputed UFC Bantamweight champion?
I mean, obviously he's doing an open work. I told Cody, I didn't even know about it, but I saw him post it. So we're on a day to day.
As long as he's paying, you know.
Wait. Besides that, though, the kid looks phenomenal, though.
Oh,
he had a great day set. He looks good. He's back to. That's why I love just seeing it. So I feel like I'm more in tune. But he looks really, really good. Couple of new things I think he'll unravel, which will be great. And I'm excited for the fight.
Looks like the media scrum will be later this week at 4:30 after a 4 p.m. Eastern open workout on October 6th. That is a Thursday. So, if you're local, get on over to Garden City, see if they let you guys in, and check out the picture of Joe Rogan with Matt Serra and Ray Longo from about 30 years ago.
What a good-looking guy Rogan was. No, look at him.
Still, Rogan and still. I mean, still. So, Pumi Nakuda.
Yes.
Is a fighter who has gotten a little shine on the Anakin Florian podcast, a guy who we all thought would make his way to the UFC at flyweight and eventually the top 15, if not higher, seemingly has announced his retirement from mixed martial arts to go into professional wrestling.
That's what I did. I went out to eat with Pumi last Sunday with a couple.
What are you laughing at? What's so funny?
I think it's very funny.
One of your best prospects. He's going to do, pro wrestling.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what he told me. He's doing pro wrestling now. He's out of MMA. That's all I got on. I think I'm the last guy to find everything out at this point. So,
second only to me. Do you? Yeah. So you don't corner him for these pro wrestling contests?
No,
right?
Definitely not. No.
Right. So, Is there any measure of disappointment? Cody's disappointed. Our producer's disappointed. I mean,
yeah.
I guess you're not disappointed.
Right, right. You could be the new Captain Lou Albano.
I'm the wizard. I'm the grand wizard.
The grand wizard. Yeah.
What the fuck am I doing? But maybe is that the direction I'm heading for? I'm a pro wrestling manager now.
Be good. It's good money in there.
McMahon. I'll tell you one thing, McMahon. I don't know. Who is that? Is that the wizard?
But, all of these references are over my head. I'm just saying. No, I'm not. But if I'm an MMA coach and Pumi Nakuda sits me down and tells me with all of his potential that he's leaving pro fighting, I guess in some part, honestly, I say good on you, man. You know, because I do think there's going to be less head trauma in that world, to be sure. You know, you don't have to spar. But I don't know, man. I was excited to see his career trajectory, which kind of seemingly stops here. So that's all.
I think, John, everybody shares your sentiment. But, you know, look, he's got to do what he's got to do, where he feels comfortable. His hand's still not right from when he broke it last time. And I think, you know, once you get an injury and you got to sit there for 6 or 8 months and, you know, bills are coming in and people are you got to make moves. I mean, look, the UFC, everybody's bitching about money anyway. So it's not like he's going to take a financial, but he's a 125 pounder too. So,
yeah.
You know, a long road. It would have been a long road before I think he saw anything substantial. And if he feels like, you know, the injuries are just mounting up at this stage of the game, let him, you know, the thing in here is I support these guys, whichever way they want to go. I'm not really here to influence them or whatever. Pumi knows that we all knew we had great potential in MMA. That's a fact. I mean, he was probably the only guy with a tank like Marab, you know. And, you know, if you ever ask Marab about Pumi, he'll tell you exactly how he felt with him. He wanted nothing to do with him. The kid was frustrating, and he could keep up with him with the cardio. He couldn't break him. So,
yeah,
it's all good stuff, man. I'm glad he's back around, and I get to see him, and he's got great energy, that kid.
And I think for a lot of other coaches, you know, this would be perhaps more devastating. You know, Ray Longo's got, you know, he's got an undisputed UFC champion in every goddamn era the promotion has ever existed, right? And has all these head-to-head wins over guys like Anderson Silva and Jose Aldo. So I think Ray Longo's doing just fine. But we wish Pumi Nakuda all the best in his future endeavors. So I just wanted to rifle through some of these other performances from the UFC fight night to see if there was any performance that you wanted to talk about. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about Mark Zuckerberg's presence in the arena. First of all, Francisco Trinaldo against a guy that you guys know pretty well, Randy Rudeboy Brown, training under the great Nardu. Deborah, your thoughts on Randy Brown extending his winning streak to 4 over the ageless Masa Randuba?
Yeah, I mean, look, Randy, the guy, the length and the height, he's super, super talented. You know, he's doing what he has to do. I mean, I think he should have been able to put that guy away, but, you know, I think that's what the UFC is going to tell him too, is like, you know, I mean, the guy's 40. Well, how old is he? 44 years old?
Yep.
Yeah, I think he knocked him down. I think he should have made more of an attempt to finish the fight. But I know he's very talented because he's been in the gym. And, you know, I think he's a problem moving forward. He's got great potential.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. There's no question about it.
No, I think he would tell you this was the most lackluster performance of this 4-fight winning streak, but you can argue it's the toughest test to pass, right? He called him Uncle Trinaldo, said to Dominic Cruz, when Dom asked a pretty thoughtful question, like when Randy talks about the challenges ahead of him, and he's so thoughtful in terms of his MMA progression, right? I mean, he feels like when your base is grappling or wrestling, maybe it's easier to expedite a title run, but he was exclusively a boxer until he's 19, and he just still feels like he's closing these gaps and checking these boxes. But to face a true veteran like that, you know, I give him credit. Any thoughts on the fence grab? You think maybe I made too much of it, or?
No, I don't think you made too. You can't. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think if it prevented the take, I don't remember it exactly. I know Peterson did it, but. You know, you just got to be whatever it is with all of this stuff. You got to be consistent. You know what I mean? So if there was an inconsistency and he's done it before where he's taken a point away, then I got a problem with it. If not, he gave him a hard warning and he moved on. And it never happened again, I don't think. But that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you could make a mistake when you're up against the cage like that to grab it. So, you know, well, I don't think it was that blatant, but it was close.
Well, somebody suggested that I eviscerated Keith Peterson. I would certainly say to any of, you know, my brethren out there in the referee and commission world. It's more a general point about like not being afraid to take a point if you see a foul that is seemingly so blatant, you know, because I don't know exactly. It's a little tricky, right, to just give the takedown. I think it's easier to just take a point. And then Randy probably would have had to go for the finish and maybe you get a more exciting fight. But that is neither here nor there. All right, gosh, my contact lenses are failing me. Fight of the night was Daniel Santos against John Castaneda. I mean, that was an absolute war. One of my favorite fights of the year so far. Looks like Alir Latifi's going to retire after a win over Alexi Olenek. God, it's amazing how many 40-year-olds we had on this fight card. Latifi, Olenek, Guido Canetti with a submission of 42 years old.
Crazy. That was a crazy fight. I don't even think I remember seeing Canetti fight.
You know, did you see Brendan Allen submit Christoph Jotko? Brendan Allen got a bonus. Dude, that's impressive, man. I mean, Jotko's a very hard guy to get out of there, and he made it look easy. And then Mike Davis over Slava Claus back for the first time in a long time. All right, before we let you go, you see Mark Zuckerberg in the building. Do you know who Mark Zuckerberg is, Ray? You must. Right?
Yes, I do.
You got Facebook, Ray? You got Instagram? Well, we know about your Instagram, trials Instagram, and tribulations.
For everybody out there, the Instagram guy is back. I got somebody working on it now. Now I'm selling Bitcoin, Kenny. Do you know that Drago calls me? He goes, how you doing with the Bitcoin? I go, you're fucking joking, right? He goes, why? What are you talking about? I go, dude, I've been hacked for like fucking 5 months. First, he congratulated me on a car. Now he's back to ask me about. No, you can't. I'm like, this can't be happening right now. Yeah, unbelievable. So anybody out there, look, I apologize, but there's some shitty people in the world and guy's getting his rocks off doing what he's doing. Have fun. I couldn't give a shit.
I was going to say, someone did that to my Facebook the other day, too, by the way. Someone posted somehow under my, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so hopefully it's not a hack. It's just whatever.
Well, guys, I was able to connect with the Zuck man at the UFC Apex. Maybe
how'd that go?
Yeah. No, he what a classy, nice guy, man. And obviously he loves mixed martial arts. But yeah, came over after the broadcast, went out of his way to come up and introduce himself. And we got to talk for about 5 minutes. Very cool.
You got to realize, John, with like those situations, like obviously the guy's a genius and what he did and everything, but he's looking at you like you're looking at him, right? Like he's a big fan of yours, just like you are, you know, and you could see the excitement in the guy's face. He was like a little kid in the candy store, what I saw anyway. But I'm glad we got another guy into mixed martial arts. I think that's a big deal. And
it's funny you say that.
And the moral of the story is hopefully you got his number. Number two, hopefully you can get Ray Longo's account back on Instagram.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
You got a direct connect now.
Yeah.
Well, you in know, terms of.
Wait, hold on a second, John. I didn't think about that. Give me that guy's freaking number. Come on. Zuckerberg, do the right thing.
He's got to be listening to the podcast
now. You look like a nice kid. Do the fucking right thing. Come on, man. This is stupid at this point.
Let's go.
Well, in terms of picking and choosing my battles with my new friend, Mark Zuckerberg, the first one I'm going to pick is obviously getting your account back. And then I'll see if
there you go.
But no, I do think more was made.
Taking this friendship to another level, buddy.
I do think largely more was made of this than needed to be, right? I mean, certainly I feel for the media who covered the way in to not be able to cover the live event, but you know, he didn't rent out the whole thing. It was just an intimate setting with a few people. And you know, that has been the case oftentimes at the UFC Apex. So I do think that a little too much was made of it. But it was cool to have him in the building and to have a supporter like that, you know, who I think could help the sport. So, you know, I know a lot of the fighters, like we're never trying to take shine away from the athletes, but I know a lot of the fighters were very excited. A lot of the coaches and the athletes all night long were trying to fucking lock eyes with that guy, you know, so it meant something to them, you know.
Oh, wow. That
should I leave it at that?
That's great. That's good. Good for Zuckerberg.
All right. So it is now October 3rd.
Ooh.
19 days out for Aljamain Sterling and TJ Dillashaw. I get a little nervous.
I do get a little nervous. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Zuckerberg to meet me Saturday. No, I'm just kidding. We were both excited. Like I was a little bit anxious to meet him and I'm thankful that I had the chance to do so. And yeah, I think sometimes you see people on television and it's weird to meet them in person, right? Because they look like they're just in a box, but then it's actually a human being, you know?
Well, I'm sure he's at another level mentally, no? I mean, he's got to be.
Yeah, than I like mean, someone like me. Yes, and he doesn't need like yeah. Adderall to get there, for example.
Oh, that you don't know.
That's what that, you need. You need Adderall. You need Adderall.
You don't know that. You don't know.
How about you telling Chris Weidman to pound sand so you could join us right on the screws?
Without a doubt. No, this podcast comes first. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
How dare you even insult me like that?
No, right. All right, my man. Well, so when are you getting out of here? When are you heading to the United Arab Emirates?
I am going, I think it's Sunday the 16th.
All right.
So I'll be there a week before. When are you getting there?
Later than you. I think I'm flying through New York, but not until I think Tuesday. So I'll be 48 hours behind you. So
wheels
down. We'll see you then. And obviously we will talk to you once more before you get on out of here. But No, I was just gonna
tell you.
No, I'm just outroing you, but please, by all means.
No, I said we'll get some bike riding in too, no?
Yeah, I think that would be great. That's your new endeavor.
That's it. That's all I could do. Bike.
How many miles? What was your longest ride in the last 2 weeks?
It wasn't more than 16.
That's like a glass half empty answer.
Oh, you know? No. I'm just saying 15 miles, 16 miles.
Good for you, man. Yeah, That's good, man. Yeah. Most I've done in my life is like 22, and it's not fun. Do we have Jason Anik?
I haven't done it yet, but I could do it. Sorry, John. I keep interrupting you. I know people are bitching and moaning. I'm jumping over everybody. But wait, last thing before I go, shout out to my daughter, Deanna, that's why I didn't watch most of the fights. I was in the city. She passed her occupational therapy boards.
Hey.
We had a great time through her nice party. All good in the hood.
Awesome.
Maybe she can consult my son, who has myriad issues.
But listen, the Longo family is always at your disposal.
All right.
Whatever.
All right.
I told you that a million times.
Yeah. Hopefully her hourly rate isn't as prohibitive as her father's. Maybe we can get her on the road.
Everything's gratis.
Hey, I'm going to bring my twin brother, Jason Anik, into the conversation before we let Longo go. See who has the best hair.
Yeah, my
man.
Oh,
God.
What is hair up? Raven Peter.
It's the good Anik.
Can you put your hair up?
It is Raymond. It is the good Anik. You can be sure in high school, like there was this one guy walked around every time he saw me, he was like, good. And every time he saw John, he was like, bad.
You don't have to go any further. I get it. Me and Kenny both get it. Trust me.
Exactly.
When I was in high school, I bicked my head bald. I wore like a bandana, you know, big maroon JNCO jeans. You know, I thought I was a budding rapper, my big starter jacket and everything else. I understand why the upperclassmen had a lot of fun at my expense.
The upperclassmen.
So
I tell you, you do got a way with words. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
The upperclassmen. I love it.
So, Jay, you know I prefer when you just go bun with this hair. If you don't know, co-host of Remember the Show with UFC welterweight contender Bilal Muhammad, right on the Anik and Florian podcast YouTube channel. Jason Anik is now with us here, crossing over with Longo. But the hair, Joel? Man, the hair. Though,
yeah, like, I let it flow for Ken. Right? Yeah, get it? Let it flow for Ken. Bro, it's pretty.
So
got some juice.
It's long.
Got a little juice, baby. Yeah. Little juice.
Basically, Ken flow.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love it.
No, but you know, you guys talked about that Trinaldo fight, and you buried the lead, didn't you, John? Did you talk about what really happened? You don't mind, do you?
No.
Oh, all right. Raymond, Kenneth, your co-host here. Did you guys hear what he said on the broadcast?
He did.
Not with Ray, but
the testicle.
Did you hear what he said, Ray? That's what he meant when he eviscerated Keith Peterson. You heard what he said. Did you talk about exactly? Did you quote what he said? I don't want to repeat. For all the viewers, no. Did you talk about what actually came out of his mouth?
No, let's hear it.
Well, no, I should have said, or maybe a referee at times would have the conviction to take a point away. And instead I said, or, you know, maybe you pull out your testicles and take a point.
Right.
Oh, you know, but I didn't.
Don't you know? Yeah. Don't you know if he pulled his testicles out, Zuckerberg probably would have sued him. Come on, man. You can't pull your pee-pee out with Zuckerberg sitting in front row. That's not right, John. We have to hold the MMA community to a higher standard.
Yeah. No, judged on every utterance over 6 or 7 hours, but let's hope my producers maybe skip this episode, you know, when they, so, all right, Ray, well, we'll let you go, buddy. But we appreciate the time. Jay just wanted to say hello. Everybody loves Raymond, right? Everybody fucking loves Raymond. So here's your hello. You know?
Jay, thank you very much. And I hope I see you soon, buddy.
Absolutely, man. Wanted to see your face. I thought they were going to get you out of here. I'm glad they didn't. Good to see you.
Ditto on that. Thank you very much. All right. My men, I'll talk to you guys later.
Ray, right.
Take it easy.
The great Kenny. Ray Longo, okay, guys. With us every week on the Anik and Florian podcast.
Can you hear me, Cody?
Yeah, hey, I mean, it sounds
on,
like
hold on.
You're Kenny. Real hot with the mic, just so you know. I don't know if it sounds like we're getting a bunch of echo from your kitchen, so just fucking chill
it's
out.
A nice
okay?
kitchen, by the way.
Just Thank chill out.
We're long guys are here, so hopefully it's not too noisy. What's up, Cody?
I'm here. You just got to make sure that your little gear setting is on the proper mic. You know, we've only done 78 episodes of live TV up to this point, but
it's on the right setting, a little different locale. You can get me out of here anytime if it's
no. We want no. It sounds fine. You sound crystal clear, as you were saying.
No, I just want
you
Kenny
can just
to
see
know.
That fantastic Slimstone in the background, slimstoneusf.com.
Right, I appreciate it. No, Kenny, just sometimes these lines out of the sky. I'm just sitting here with my head in my hands, you know. if he'll talking about the ref, you know, who he's defended ad nauseum with Dominic Cruz, you know, if he just pull out his testicles, pull them out, and
so I mean, He rarely does anything like that. I will
Thank
say
you,
that. I don't think he's
do
ever.
It.
I don't think he's ever done that. there's never been another reference to testicles, as far as I can recall. And I don't know. Maybe he was a little excited because Dominic Cruz was right next to him. He wanted to get at.
I think that's probably.
And for the record, spoken lines, everyone. I know we had a little bit of fun at that expense, but spoken lines, not other kinds of lines.
I don't know how the Trinaldo corner reacted, you know, and I think largely I am making too much of this singular fence grab, but man, in the moment, it's like, gosh,
would it have been worse like if you said like cojones or like what?
Well, no, the reason if you really want to know,
Portuguese? What's the,
if you really want to know the reason I said testicles in the moment in my head is because I was trying to soften up the word balls, if you can believe that. And I actually made it harder. So
exactly. But I'm just saying, like, you can just read the Modelo promos. Just relax. You don't need to agitate. He loves to agitate. He's talking about Adderall when I'm in the other room. Just like, what do you, I mean, he doesn't even take Adderall. Like, you know, run the mouth. All his life, run his mouth. I'm coming running. Anyway, go ahead.
So the reason we're having you on the program today is because last week on your show, which is live Thursday nights on this channel, your co-host Bilal Muhammad, who will fight Sean Brady October 22nd and who is already in UAE in Dubai, about an hour away from where they're going to fight, announced last Thursday that Khabib Nurmagomedov is going to be in his corner, which is very exciting. Now, I don't know if you can tell us like whose expense, like who's the odd man out now or not, but what are your thoughts on what that means, you know, 3 weeks from now?
Well, I don't think it's an odd man out necessarily. The third guy, I think, can fluctuate from time to time, but his main boxing coach, Mike Valley, will be down there. And Lewis Taylor, his main man, former PFL champ, Kenny, will be there. They're both always there, but Khabib to be the third guy, just to be immersed in this camp. And you see Cody nodding his head. There's so much noise about Sean Brady out there. And sometimes I feel like my man Bilal doesn't get enough respect. Boxing looked a lot crispier last time out. I'm just glad he's put himself in the absolute best position to win with this whole crew. But frankly, I have tremendous confidence in Bilal, no matter who's in his corner. I mean, his mental fortitude and all the different tools in there. I'm looking forward to Sean Brady feeling him on the mat, but I'm excited for Khabib to be there. But for Bilal, if you want to know the truth, from my perspective, it's dude's ready to go 365 days a year. I don't think it's a huge needle mover for me.
Kenny, a lot of people are picking Sean Brady in this spot, to Jason's point, in terms of a training partner and a corner man in preparation over 5 weeks Bilal will have in Dubai, essentially with Khabib. I don't know that you can do much better, right? When we hear what everybody says about how Khabib feels in training, how he feels in the octagon from guys who feel him for the first time there, like Gaethje and Poirier, you know, I feel like it's a feather in the cap to be sure for Bilal.
Not to mention a 200-pound Khabib Nurmagomedov right now. You know, right, he's has said, I'm not dieting ever again, basically. But yeah, no, I mean, how much experience are you going to gain from that? Just one session alone, I'm sure Bilal could pick up a whole lot. But this is a guy in Khabib who has a tremendous amount of information. I think it's going to help Bilal. And honestly, and I'm not just saying this because Jason's here or you know, Bilal might be watching, whatever. I think it's a good matchup for Bilal. I think Sean Brady will have certain technical advantages over Bilal, but I think people sleep on Bilal's positioning. Just like, Uriah was talking about keeping it simple. You can solve so many issues with just positioning alone. And I think Bilal might not be known for his submission game, but he's very well known for his positional game and his understanding of where to be at the right time. He rarely makes mistakes. He knows how to execute when it counts. And I think he just has way more experience than Sean Brady. So I think it's a good fight for him, man. I think he would be favored either way. When you add in that component of Khabib Nurmagomedov, I think he'll be that much more prepared.
And John, let me just hop in real quick. Also being there with Islam and Islam's whole championship camp, right. I think can't be understated either. Go ahead, Cody.
Well, I was going to say, Kenny, if you feel that way, I mean, do you venture a guess on what the line is?
Gosh, do you have is Bilal a major underdog? Is Sean like 2-1?
No.
Okay,
it's close, guess. But Bilal is the underdog.
Okay, like 175 plus 175. Closer. What do you got?
So it's plus 120. It was plus 130 last week. That's so about, it has moved a little bit.
So Brady's minus 140. Right. Yeah, that's how you mute the landscapers. When you live in Florida and you do as much media as I do, you learn to mute the landscapers when you're not talking.
Yeah, I did it. I did it a second ago. You kick me out of here at any time. I'm just keep talking.
So, all right. I think who do you guys have coming up? You know what? I was going to ask you guys who you have coming up on Thursday. I know the show window has changed a little bit with Bilal Muhammad on the other side of the world. Do you guys have any guests coming up this Thursday, or do you not know that information at the current time?
I don't know that at the current time, but probably not. Right. Probably be, if possible, be like Bronstetter and maybe Mystic Black. Maybe we'll do a little. Maybe
I would like to see Bronstetter and Petrie go head to head. Jay, you were muted.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. No, I am because when Jay, I heard anything the else? Leaf blower, I turned you on mute.
Jay, anything else before we blow you out of here?
Just a quick thing I want to say quickly. For those who don't know, John and I are hosting this show. This isn't a plug, but we're hosting a show called Anik Squared on the Hammer Betting Network. It's an NFL pick show. And the week you guys went dark, right? And John tells me, I know the views don't matter. It's all about the content. John doesn't care about the content, right? But so, we got a few views here and there. Right? The week you guys go dark, right? 1,500 views. Everyone's searching for you boys. Everyone trying to find you boys, searching. So everyone, probably got 1,500 clicks. Not necessarily views. Producer was all excited. I knew it was fraudulent. So anyway, you had some loyal viewers trying to find you guys when you go dark. You guys going strong, but thank you for having me. I'm gonna mute.
Well, that's why you're here, right, Jay? Isn't that is Jay gonna put his neck out there on the line, or is it just gonna be me?
Well, in the future, I think we'll have you two go head to head on the NFL picks just to get a second voice on here. But he's not making an NFL pick today. No, absolutely not. I want that leaf blower fucking gone. You can check out Anik Squared. If you are so inclined, we make NFL head-to-head picks against each other. But Cody, let's triple box this thing. Jay, thank you for your contributions. You can see him with Bilal Muhammad every Thursday on this channel. God, that audio kills me.
His video looks so good. Like, not for nothing. He looked great. So.
No, it looked good. And he's going to be apologetic, but there's nothing he can do.
Beautiful kitchen. Great Pat's hat.
These Florida landscapers, huh? Like the day after the hurricane, they don't give a fuck, huh? They're just out there.
Give me a little space.
Sometimes I wonder though if people are just being nice about the hair, right? Like I understand that I have an issue and so does he. I've been shaving my head since I was like 14, right? And here comes the apology, by the way. I've been shaving my head forever. He's been growing his hair obviously a long time. But like I'm not trying to be funny when I just don't think it looks like it's like this long white hair. Like, what are we trying to do
here?
It
looks good. He's kind of got that like Dumbledore Gandalf thing going on.
I don't know what that means.
It's like a wizard. I like the long locks. It's longer than I saw last time for sure.
My dad just saw him for the first time in 6 years, Like, what does he think? I don't even know. Cody Merrow now joins us. Got a nice haircut, Cody. What's up, man?
Haircut. I'm letting the beard go. I'm trying to get my Kenny on.
There you go.
You can go over and use code Kenflow at justformen.com if you want. But he doesn't use it. He doesn't use it. It's just a promo.
God, there's so many rumors about this now, guys. Anakin is starting crazy. A wildfire.
It is. This is just
all
crazy,
natural. All natty. Know? There is a white hair somewhere right around here or something. I'll pluck it, but I won't dye it.
You and Francisco Trinaldo both stopped aging at 33. He said that. He said he stopped aging at 33. And you know what?
That's awesome. Oh, man.
Cody, what do you have for us that we might have missed, good sir?
So just some quick button-up points for UFC Fight Night 211. The bonuses were Brandon Allen, Chelsea Chandler, Guido Canetti, and Joaquim Silva. You like that?
I like how you nailed Guido Canetti and Joaquim Silva. Former pronunciation of the week names here on the
show. Fool me once. I thought Chelsea Chandler was a great underdog, but I had no idea why Stolyarenko was the favorite there. She's a one trick pony. She's got a good armbar, which Chelsea Chandler almost got caught in the first, but I thought that line was wild. And Chelsea Chandler's huge. I mean, she's going to be a contender.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. She's, I think if she's, 24/7, 365 committed to 35, she could be a really good bantamweight, but, yeah, nice debut for her to be sure.
Well, and I couldn't believe that she was a lawyer before she went into MMA. I mean, not for nothing. I probably would have made a different choice myself. But
well, that didn't come up in our fighter meeting. I mean, I got my Chelsea Chandler notes here. I mean, yes, she did. She graduated from the University of Miami. I don't know that she went law school as any sort of practicing lawyer. I mean, let's see here. Bachelor's degree from the University of Miami, but no, then went to
I think passed the LSATs, something like that. I don't know.
All right.
Hopefully.
Maybe I should listen more.
Maybe get to. Nah, I won't even make a testicles joke there.
Her sister, Colleen Chandler. This didn't make the broadcast because it was a quick fight, but her sister Colleen fights for Invicta FC. So the Chandler sisters both making moves.
Damn. Colleen. That's a great name. Chandler.
Colleen.
Or Chelsea Chandler. Colleen, fucking Colleen, got it done again. Hey, you guys see Colleen's fighting Saturday night at the
Saturday? It was fucking mint, dude.
She at Westbury? The Westbury Forum? Fight of the night was Castaneda versus Santos?
Goddamn right it was.
That was crazy. That was a crazy fight.
Dude, how about Willie Cat Daniel Santos? Recoverability. I mean, next level, you know?
Well, and it just goes to show you what an experienced ref in there can do, right? Because an inexperienced ref probably would have stopped that fight. Watching at home, I thought it maybe could have been stopped, but then you get robbed of a great performance like that.
Cody, I'm going to put you on the spot here, mainly for my own ego. I did get that fight wrong. What are the standings between me and our guy, Brian Petrie?
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, it's amazing how close it is, like, fight for fight.
Yeah. I think Kenny has like a one pick lead, but then because of the odds, BP has a couple hundred dollar lead.
Oh, son of a bitch.
But we're 10 months in now and it's a one pick difference. I mean, that's pretty astonishing.
It's close, but it's close percentage wise. I mean,
yes,
numbers
very, okay. Very close.
Okay.
So in the main event, Jan on Jan. 7 UFC wins all by decision. So the next time she gets in there, maybe a hammer on the old decision ticket. Sadiq Youssef guillotine was 30 seconds in, but it was his first ever pro submission win. Don't sleep on Super Sadiq's jiu-jitsu, huh?
Yeah.
Brendan Allen, career finish rate is 80%. That's a Remember the Show champ right there. And leading into that, I was looking at the amount of fights that he had compared to Jocko. I mean, it's kind of crazy. He's 26 years old. He's had like 29 pro fights, I think. Something crazy like that.
Yeah, he's the hardest guy to pick against, though, for or against.
Yeah, and he doesn't do himself any favors with the matchups.
Yeah.
13-0 amateur record. He's now 20-5 as a professional before his 27th birthday. By the way, did you guys hear on the broadcast? I know Kenny didn't. So basically, Brendan Allen said that Jocko turned him down twice. Okay. Jocko didn't necessarily comment directly on that, but he said he then asked McMaynard for the fight, and he called Brendan Allen an annoying kid from Louisiana. Brendan Allen went out and put that American grappling on him.
I gotta love that. So the last point on there was Gonna Fly Now, which a year Latifi walked out to, possibly Latifi's last fight and or last fight in the UFC. Gonna Fly Now is now tied with Stranglehold for the most wins in UFC walkout history. that info is via Jay Petrie from Sherdog, not my own.
How about so, that?
Pretty interesting there. So if you're looking for a walkout fight or car song, that one's it. And then reported walkout information here. Matt Frivola has gotten permission to walk out to the Edwin Diaz trumpet song at MSG. Oh,
no way.
He talked to Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, and got permission to use it. Wow. So
that
place is going to be lit.
I don't know if that is lost on this audience, how big a deal that is, but this Mets closer's entrance to this trumpet song is just the stuff of legends. And let us pray there are enough people inside Madison Square Garden at the time that Matt Frivola fights, because that is absolutely awesome. And thank you for bringing that to my attention. That is really cool.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
And then another, I thought it was, if you go back and watch Remember the Show, Bilal was talking very, very glowingly about his choice to go over to Abu Dhabi, because he said it took him about a week and a half to get adjusted. Just to the climate, just to the time.
It's brutal, dude.
And because this card is going to be on local time, that's another adjustment that fighters are going to have to make. If you're showing up on Monday for that Saturday, Sunday fight or whatever, I think you're doing yourself a huge disservice. So, you know, part of me hopes that, you know, this is the only time I'm rooting against a Brady in any sport, but part of me hopes that Sean Brady doesn't do his due diligence there.
Well, it's interesting. The last time we had a major pay-per-view in Abu Dhabi, if memory serves, I was on a treadmill at 1:30 a.m. and we were calling fights in the morning, and I think it was flipped. Right now, it's catering to Abu Dhabi time. It'll be a primetime event there, 2 p.m. Eastern in the States for the review. And, you know, yeah, I think though, for a lot of athletes, they'd rather compete, you know, at night than in the morning. So I do think it'll be easier on the fighters as a whole, but a good point nonetheless. Do you have an NFL selection for us for week 5 before we let you fly?
I do.
And so what are you, 0-3 on the year?
Yeah, on the air, I'm 0-3. But my picks to you are at least somewhat successful, so you can cater to the audience and tell them that I'm not a horrible capper, at least.
Not at all. So,
but the official pick this week.
3, and what is the selection?
So this week, I'm going to the UK. I'm going across the pond for an early start. I love the Packers -7.5 against the Giants, who I don't think even have a quarterback on the roster at this point, because they're heading over there. So they have to fly to London, right? Tyrod Taylor got a concussion. So can he even fly to London? We don't know. Daniel Jones has a high ankle sprain. Flying to London ain't going to make that any better. That's for damn sure. So I don't know who their quarterback is going to be heading into that game. The Packers, I thought, looked pretty bad against us. You know, almost lost against New England Patriots. Bailey Zappe, the third quarterback on the roster, went to overtime. I think they're going to have a huge chip on their shoulder coming into next week and have to really show themselves something. So -7.5 Packers is the pick for me. Packers 5th in total yards defensively, but 22nd against the run, which does give me a little bit pause. But I do just think the Packers are going to roll over the Giants in London.
All right. We'll see if that game stays on the board, given some of the injuries for the New York Giants. But Cody Merrill likes the Green Bay Packers -7.5 in week 5 of the NFL. All right. Thank you. Good stuff, my man.
Yeah. Love your shirt, bro. Love your shirt.
Hey, thanks, man. That's the Cowboys edition, Abu Dhabi edition of the One More Sleep t-shirts, available right now at millions.co. Just search John Anik, and I believe Anik 2 will get you 15% off. Also, don't forget, for Anik and Florian podcast merchandise, AnikFlorianPodcast.com. Code KenFlow, code Longo, both work. FAM15 might work as well. Don't forget to check out Bilal and Jay this Thursday on Remember the Show. And of course, Kenny Florian MartialArts.com, especially on the heels of a Mackenzie Dern main event. Today's episode of the Anik and Florian podcast has been brought to you in part by UFC Fight Pass, the world's premier combat sports streaming service with over 200 live events, the largest fight library in existence, original shows, and so very much more. Sign up for 1 year and get half off for a limited time at UFCFightPass.com/signup. All right, thanks to Longo and Jay for joining us. Thanks to our executive producer, Cody Merrill, our intern, Will Berger, and everybody else. We will be back next week to get you ready for Alexa Grasso and Viviani Araujo. With that, for Kenflo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for listening, for watching. See you in less than a week and spend. Yo, later.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.